The Power of the Spoken Word, Chapter 9, Victory and Fulfillment. Victory and fulfillment are two wonderful words. And since we realize that words and thoughts are a form of radioactivity, we carefully choose the words we wish to see crystallized. Life is a crossword puzzle. The right word gives you the answer. Many people are rattling off destructive words in their conversation. We hear them say, "I'm broke. I'm sick." Remember, by your words you are justified, and by your words you are condemned. You're condemned by them because they do not return void. Change your words and you change your world, for your word is your world. You choose your food, and the world is now calorie conscious. People no longer eat buckwheat cakes, beefsteak, potatoes, pie, and 3 cups of coffee for breakfast. To keep down weight, they eat dry toast and orange juice. This is a tremendous discipline, but they're working for results. Why not try a diet of the right words? For you're literally eating your words. There's the value of the affirmation. You're deliberately building up a constructive idea in your consciousness. Your consciousness may be crammed and jammed with destructive ideas, but continually making a statement of truth will dissolve these negative thought forms. These thought forms have been built up from your own vain imaginings. Perhaps as a child you were taught that life was hard, happiness fleeting, and that the world was cold and unfriendly. These ideas were impressed upon your subconscious, and you found things just as they were predicted. With the knowledge of truth, all these external pictures may be changed, for they are only pictures, which change as your subconscious beliefs change. When I tell people about the power of the word, and that words and thoughts are a form of radioactivity and do not return void, they say, "Oh, is it as easy as that?" Many people like things difficult and hard to understand. I believe that was the reason the amazingly simple teachings of Jesus Christ were forgotten after a few hundred years. People build up creeds and ceremonies which they only half understand. And now in this 20th century, the secret things are being revealed, and we are again having primitive Christianity. Ask believing, thou shalt receive. We know that our beliefs, our expectancies, are impressed upon the subconscious and carried out. We might say, if you ask, not believing, you will not receive. Faith creates expectancy. This infinite intelligence upon which man draws his supply is called, by Jesus Christ, your Heavenly Father. The Father within, he described as a kind, loving parent, desirous of pouring all good things upon his children. Fear not, little flock. 'Tis your Father's good pleasure to give you the kingdom. He taught that God's law was simply a law of love and goodwill. Love your neighbor as yourself. Do unto others as you would be done by. Any violation of the law of love causes a short circuit. The way of the transgressor is hard. God is immutable law. I am the Lord, the law. I change not. Divine ideas are immutable, not subject to change. What wonderful words, immutable, not subject to change. A woman came to me filled with fears and forebodings, She said for years she had been pursued by the fear that even if she should receive the desire of her heart, something would happen to spoil it. I gave her the statement, "The divine plan of your life is a perfect idea in divine mind, incorruptible and indestructible, and cannot be spoiled in any way." A great load was lifted from her consciousness, and for the first time in years, she had a feeling of joy and freedom. Know the truth, and the truth gives you a sense of freedom. Soon then comes the actual freedom on the external. This supreme intelligence is what man becomes one with when he speaks the word. This supreme intelligence awaits man's direction, but it must have right of way. It must not be limited. Divine action in your body brings health. There is only one disease, congestion, and one cure, circulation. Congestion and stagnation are the same thing. People say they have got into a rut. A new idea will take them out of a rut. We must get out of the rut of negative thinking. The word enthusiasm in the dictionary is defined to be inspired or possessed by a god. Enthusiasm is divine fire and kindles enthusiasm in others. To be a good salesman, you must be enthusiastic about the articles you're selling. If you're bored with your business or uninterested, the fire goes out and no one else will be interested. A woman came to me for success in business. She said, "I have a shop, but it's usually empty. I don't bother to open it until late in the day. What's the use?" I replied, "There is indeed no use so long as you feel the way you do. You're keeping people away. Become enthusiastic over what you have to sell. Be enthusiastic about yourself. Be enthusiastic about the God power within you and get up early to open your shop and be ready for the big crowd." By this time, she was all wound up with divine expectancy. She dashed down to her shop as early as possible, and people were waiting outside and poured in all day. People often say to me, "Treat my business." I say, "No, I will treat you, for you are your business." Your quality of thought penetrates every article for sale and all the conditions connected with it. Jesus Christ was divinely enthusiastic about the message he had to bring to the Father within each man. He was enthusiastic about faith. He told the people that whatsoever they ask in his name would be given them. It was a message of asking and receiving. He told them just how to comply with spiritual law. "Ask believing, thou shalt receive. When ye pray, believe ye have it. Why are ye fearful, O ye of little faith?" After 2,000 years, his divine fire is rekindled in the consciousness of all truth students. We're having a Christian renaissance, a new birth, a revival of Christianity. He taught a universal principle without creed or ceremony. We see members of all religions, denominations, coming into this truth movement. It doesn't take them away from their churches. In fact, many clergymen are now teaching what the metaphysicians are teaching. For Jesus Christ is the greatest of all metaphysicians because he proved his principles and brought miracles to pass. He sent forth his disciples to preach the gospel and heal the sick. For about 300 years, his message survived. Then his divine fire was lost, and the words, "Be thou healed," were no longer spoken. Creed and ceremony took their place. Now we see people flocking to these truth centers to be healed, blessed, and prospered. They have learned to pray aright and have understanding faith. A woman told me of an answered prayer. Her son wrote her that he was going to Southern California on a business trip in his car. She read in the morning paper of a flood, and she immediately spoke the word for divine protection. She had a great feeling of security. She knew he would be protected. She soon heard from him saying some business had interfered with his leaving, so he was detained. If he'd left when he had expected, he would have been in the flood district. We come divinely enthusiastic about our answered prayers, which we call demonstrations. For it means that we have demonstrated the truth and have been set free from some limitation. The 24th Psalm is one of the most enthusiastic of the many psalms of praise and thanksgiving. Lift up your heads, O ye gates, and be ye lifted up, ye everlasting doors, and the King of glory shall come in. Who is this King of glory? The Lord strong and mighty, the Lord mighty in battle. The gates and doors symbolize man's consciousness. As you are lifted up in consciousness, you contact the superconscious, the God within, and the King of glory comes in. This King of glory lifts your burdens and fights your battles, solves your problems. The average person has a difficult time letting the King of glory come in. Doubt, fear, and apprehension keep the doors and gates locked against your good. A student told me of a situation which she attracted by negative thinking. She had been invited to a gathering of old and valued friends. It was of the utmost importance for her to be there. She was so anxious to go, she said to herself repeatedly, "Oh, I hope nothing happens to interfere." The day of the reception arrived, and she awoke with a terrible headache. At one time, she had been subject to these headaches, going to bed for several days, but she had not had one for many years. Her doubts and fears had attracted this disappointment. She called me up and said, "Will you please speak the word that I will be well by evening to go to the reception?" I replied, "Why, of course. Nothing can interfere with God's perfect plan." So I spoke the word. Later, she told me of her miracle. She said in spite of the way she felt, she prepared to go. She cleaned her jewelry, got her dress ready to wear, and attended to every detail, though she felt scarcely able to move. Very late in the afternoon, she said she had a peculiar sensation as if a fog lifting in her consciousness, and she was perfectly well. She went to the reception and had a wonderful time. I believe that the healing might have come more quickly had she not said, "I want to be well by tonight." We're continually limiting ourselves by our words, so not until night was she perfectly well. By your word, you are justified, and by your word, you are condemned. I knew a man who was the center of attraction wherever he went, because he was always enthusiastic about something, whether it was about shoes, clothes, or a haircut. He enthused others into buying the same things. He didn't gain anything material by it. He was just naturally enthusiastic. Someone has said, if you want to be interesting to others, be interested in something. An interested person is an enthusiastic person. We often hear people say, do tell me what you're interested in. Many people are without vital interests and are hungry to hear what other people are doing. They're usually the ones who keep the radio turned on from early morning till late at night. They must be entertained every minute. Their own affairs do not hold enough interest. A woman once said to me, I love other people's affairs. She lived on gossip. Her conversation consisted of, I was told, I was given to understand, or I heard. It's needless to say she is now paying her karmic debt. A great unhappiness has overtaken her, and everyone knows about her affairs. It's dangerous to neglect your own affairs and to take an idle curiosity in what others are doing. We should all be busily engaged in perfecting ourselves, but take a kindly interest in others. Make the most of your disappointments by transmuting them into happy surprises. Transmute all failure into success. Transmute all unforgiveness into forgiveness, all injustice into justice. You'll be kept busy enough perfecting your own life. You won't have time to run other people's affairs. Jesus Christ aroused the enthusiasm of the multitudes by performing miracles, healing the sick, and raising the dead. And a great multitude followed him because they saw his miracles, which he did for them that were diseased. As we read this, we feel the enthusiasm of the multitudes which surrounded him. With him, all things were possible, for he knew that he and the Father were indeed one. With divine enthusiasm, I bless what I have and look with wonder at their increase.